fascinating. Gadgets, gizmos, and gear-based technologies.
Welcome to FGGBT. This is the show that takes your favorite fictional science and technology, and we make it a reality. We are the Brain Trust. I am the analytical mastermind, Daniel J. Glenn. With me, the physics phenom, Dr. Michael Dennett.
Dan, it is so great to be here because I love it when you introduce new movies to me, and particularly ones without a lot of blood. That's always my favorite direction to go. And sure, this one was such a great recommendation, Dan. I recommend it to my youngest child, who's an animation major at LMU. And for all of you who's out here looking to hire her, I just thought I'd throw in a plug for her.
She said it. There you go. If you want to hire Dennis's daughter, also watch this movie. But there's one man who can do all of that. Ben, you have the power to both watch this movie and hire Dennis's daughter. Are you going to bring her up to the Brain Station? What are you doing up there? What's going on?
Well, you know, maybe I think we should all come up here because, Dan, this week there's a comet that's going to be making a close pass of the Brain Station. And I can't wait to get up close and personal with such a stellar beauty.
Oh, well, I can't either. You know, I wish I was up there with you, Ben, because you're a stellar beauty in your own right there, Ben. So don't sell yourself short. You know, you're welcome. So the movie that Denon is referring to is called Coherence. Now, this, if you want this episode to be coherent, I might recommend watching this one beforehand. This one gets a little weird, but I give you my guarantee as the analytical mastermind of film and television, I put my stamp of approval on this. This movie is worth watching. And I will tell you guys, this is, if you want to know what I like, this is it. It's a clever concept executed perfectly. It's sci-fi. There are elements of horror. There are normal people brushing with the odd. So, Denon, I know you love musicals. That's your opinion of a good movie. But if you want to know what's going on in my noggin, this is the one that really gets me going.
And actually, Dan, you know, believe it or not, this is the type of movie that I also love. It's the other extreme of it. It's the total intellectual thriller in my sense. Like, I know it's technically a horror, but I don't know if this is another subgenre. I think of it as more a psychological torture or thriller, right? Mm-hmm. It's not like, there's no jump scares, really. There's no, like, extra blood. But there is that air of deep mystery. Now, I have to admit, it could have been added to. There's some points they could have broken out in song and helped explain the plot better and the obvious things going on. But, you know, other than that, Dan, it was a great movie.
I curse you, Denon.
Yeah, it's unfortunate we didn't see any songs in this. You know, maybe we'll talk about later. Maybe there are places we could have seen songs in this movie.
Okay. I'm going to cut both of you off. That's terrible. This movie's perfect the way it is, 100%. Oh, well, no, I will tell you. You know, it's not entirely perfect, guys. The explanation for the weird phenomenon is totally off the wall and doesn't make any real sense. So if I was going to give you a summary of this movie, I think this is pretty good. This is a movie about a dinner party consisting of about 8 friends who, through the course of the night, discover that there are multiple versions of themselves that seem to be occupying their neighborhood. And it all begins when a comet flies overhead and weird things start to happen. And then when that comet leaves and breaks up and goes away, things start to return to normal. This is a kind of a far-fetched idea. You know, this comet seems to be affecting cell phone reception. It's breaking the glass on cell phones, doing weird stuff. But I don't think, Denon, I think you got a better explanation than a comet flying overhead for what we see in this movie.
Well, it's very clear the comet is a metaphor, Dan, for quantum observation. And we'll just take it at that and then move on. They are in a world of quantum mechanics where an observation is not directly happening. And I think this is super cool, right? I love this part of it. I think many people, they use Schrodinger's cat in a box in the middle of the movie to explain it. I think for what they're experiencing, the better explanation is the double slit experiment. Many people have heard of, you know, you send an electron at 2 slits, and the electron actually goes through both slits and then interferes with itself and makes an interesting pattern on the other side. This is very much one electron becoming 2 electrons, one in each slit. And this is what we see in this movie. One person is more than one version of themselves. And so the double slit, I think, is a great analogy for this movie from that perspective.
Well, I'll tell you this, Denon. I mean, I feel like I go through two slits sometimes and interfere with myself, creating a crazy pattern on the wall. So I can relate to quantum mechanics. I feel like I'm quantum in at my very core. But that's one particle, Denon. You know, and in this movie, we are seeing multiple people and multiple particles. So how does that kind of, you know, for lack of a better term, scale up to people?
Well, I think that's a great question. The way I like to think about it is go from our two slits that are on, say, a board and a line, and now think of a box. And instead of one particle, think of eight particles, the eight people. Now, they might be in one quadrant in the box. And in wave mechanics and quantum mechanics, when you're not making a measurement, people or particles are peaks in the wave function where the probability is high that you're there. And normally we talk about that one peak. With the double slit, we would talk about two peaks, so the one electron becomes two. Here we have eight peaks initially, one for each person, each particle, but then you have multiple copies of those peaks in this really big box. It's like making the box and dividing it into, say, thirds. They first talk about three or going up. So now you take those eight peaks and make two more copies. So now you have three peaks for each person with eight people. That's 24 peaks. Right. And what's cool in the box version, you can now imagine all those 24 peaks moving around and switching places with each other and interfering with each other and causing cool stuff. So you go from one particle becoming two in the slits to eight particles becoming multiple copies of themselves in a really big box.
Things get super weird with quantum mechanics. This is why people have a hard time kind of wrapping their head around it. But there's this kind of interesting, so the movie's called Coherence, but they explain decoherence as basically when those particles split. Decoherence means they never actually affect each other. They are completely separate worlds and separate entities. And coherence means that that's not the case. They're all interfering and interacting. And that is what we see in this movie. You know, the laws, it seems to be we are not being observed and quantum mechanics is running haywire at the macro level. It's running wild, I think is the technical way to describe it.
I think that's totally true, Dan. And it's one way to think about it. Normally, like you're in the box with like four versions of yourself, one in each quadrant. And you can imagine maybe walls in the box that keep you in your quadrant. And okay, so now you're decohered and you don't interfere. Now imagine the walls go down. And suddenly now you can move into these other quadrants and interfere with each other. And this is the coherence. That's the weird interference effect. And so that's what I love about this movie. I think the Schrodinger cat is a common thing, but I think two slits, particles in a box, walls, and coherence and decoherence is the way I would go.
It's no wonder the average person can't understand this. I don't know what's wrong with them. This is so simple when we break it down like that.
Yeah. Well, it just makes me think about the interferometry devices I used to work on that used fiber optics, but I'm having trouble figuring out how you shove a person through a fiber optic to make the measurement.
It's not easy. You know, we talked about, you know, the sense of touch. You have to push really, really hard, Ben, but then we get a fission reaction, and it's not good. It's not good. But this movie gets weird. So basically what's happening is all of these parallel realities become accessible to all of the versions of you that are in them. And the characters jump between both and they accidentally interact. You know, I think I took a trip to the Four Corners. Now, I'm humble brag here. I've been to the Four Corners part of the United States. And it is crazy because it's just it's this small little dot and you can be in four states at the exact same time. In a lot of ways, it feels like some parts of these people's realities are all connected in that way in this small little black box section of the neighborhood that seems to be, you know, a random number generator in some way. But they all seem to be connected there. I don't know if this is a great analogy, but this is what it feels like to me.
Well, I actually love that visual, Dan, and it builds on the fact that I picked four and talked about quadrants in the box, right? That's why it's a perfect analogy. Sure. I'm not sure why you view it as a humble brag to have been at the Four Corners, but I'll leave that.
Cool. Cool to be there, you know?
It's very cool to be there,
Dan. Great part of our country, Denon. I'm an American first.
It is. You are. But I love the fact that the visual here makes a lot of sense in that they no longer actually have a neighborhood, right? They're thinking of it as they're seeing the neighborhood. But what's cool is everything is dark, except maybe if the other house, that's the other version of their house, happens to have the lights on, right? And they only see, obviously, ones that have the lights on because they are kind of in this nexus. And that's why I like your four corner analogy. They talk about going through this black zone, right? Mm-hmm. Where they can't see anything. And to me, that's the four corner point, right? Yes. So you were lucky you were there when there wasn't a comet going overhead and you could actually see the four states you were standing in. Right. They don't have that. They don't have that luxury.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah, well, who knows what state Dan would have ended up in if he had if it had been dark when he was there.
It would have been, Colorado-tosia-zonia. Yeah. I get them all? I think there's four. I think I only said three, but we're not going to worry about that right now. But this large section, it is strange because when people go out of their home, I feel like we have to explain some of the weirdness in this movie. When people leave the house to go investigate these other, you know, so the lights go dark in the entire community. They don't know what's going on. They look down, they see one house with lights on. They decide to go check it out. Two people leave the house. They enter into this black zone, but it's kind of like a random number generator. They are then sent out into another reality, right? Like they go through and then the house they go is actually their house, but it's another version of them's house. And that's where, you know, that black box becomes an issue because the randomness of that, it becomes difficult to get back home.
It does. And there's another cool quantum analogy here that we can talk about very briefly, which is quantum tunneling.
Okay.
Right. And in quantum systems, because you are actually a wave function still, you look like a particle, but you're not a particle yet. Mm-hmm. Right. You extend slightly outside and you can go through what would otherwise be energy barriers. So I think of this black zone that they go through is what it would be like as a full size person to quantum tunnel. And quantum tunneling is when an electron goes from one place to another place through a barrier it shouldn't be able to go through. And while it's doing that, its wave function is different. And so I really think quantum tunneling, you can think of it as almost like you touch something and you get sucked through instantaneously, mm-hmm. right? And so they're getting sucked through this place, and where you get popped out is a bit random in the movie. Right. Or totally random. And so I think that sucking through this barrier is a good way to think about it.
I would say seemingly random because we don't know. There could be a pattern of some kind, but we don't know. But the first thing that we see, and I think this is actually really interesting. So there's a character named Mike in the movie and he's an actor and he talks about how he was in this TV show Roswell. And Roswell's a real show, right around the turn of the century. You know, it was a real show. It turns out that actor was not in Roswell, but he was actually Xander in Buffy. And I thought this was so odd because Buffy's a real show. Roswell's a real show. Why didn't he just say Buffy? And it makes me feel like this is the initial, the directors and the writers basically setting up a movie where this movie is its own alternate reality. And you're already setting up the weirdness. And if you caught that early on, you can see that, like, there's something strange in the neighborhood.
I like it. It's kind of like really deep foreshadowing, Dan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very much so. I think very much so.
Well, and if you know anything about the actor, his real life struggles are represented in the movie as well, you know. You know, he's had trouble with alcohol, and so does the character Mike.
Yeah, and he also has a twin brother, and he meets him later on. which is also wild. But you know, when I think about movies, you know, in a lot of ways, movies are really alternate timelines in some way. You know, we see people we recognize, but they're playing different characters, different people. You know, they are alternate fantasy versions of our reality. So this is a really kind of a meta way to look at it. But, you know, we talk about this black box and the two people, Hugh and Amir, they're the first characters who go out into this world, into this black box, and they end up somewhere else, which they don't realize until much later on. But let's say, guys, let's say we are the first people to go out into the world, all right? What do you think it would be like to end up in a new timeline? And what clues would you need to know to really realize that you may not be where you're supposed to be?
You know, that's a great question, Dan, because what we see here first are the people who have left their house and thought they went back to their house.
Yes, right. That's right.
And so it's really interesting, and it's not the people who live there. So, like, when I thought about this, like, they're clearly going to the house that later, like, when the dude who lives there goes, is like, wait, this is my house.
Yeah.
They go there, and you would think that would be the first clue. Wait, this is the house I was just in. Mm-hmm. But it goes to an American thing that some of our neighborhoods are so uniform. Like, if it's not your actual house, ironically, yeah. that is not the first sign. I mean, I know you asked me what would be the first sign, right?
Yeah.
It should be that the house I thought was different is the same. And that didn't happen. And I think that's kind of really telling. And it made me think, like, the number of times, Dan, I go up to a house that I'm visiting or whatever, and I have these moments of doubt. Like, am I going to ring the bell and it's going to be the right people, or some stranger going to be like, what the hell are you doing here?
Right? Yeah, right.
You know? Yeah. So it's kind of, that should be the first sign, and it's not. So when you get back, you're probably you're not looking for signs, right? Because you went and came back. Like, so, and we're on average not very observant as humans. So I'm worried if you can't tell that you didn't go to the same house when you come back, like, what are you gonna notice anyway?
And I will say, you know, one of my favorite movies that we've done, probably close second to Coherence, is Vivarium. And that's all built on this idea that the neighborhood is completely uniform. And it's relatively normal to the people in that movie as well, even though it's a little weird to them, too.
Yeah. Well, I think it's weird. If I remember right, those were British folk, right, in Vivarium?
I don't remember where it is. Maybe. It could be. Yeah. It could be.
But maybe it was America. It doesn't matter. All I know is that this movie is clearly a good show of why the uniform tract homes are a bad idea.
Right.
Because you think your neighbor's house is your house.
Yep.
That's how you end up trapped in the wrong quantum timeline.
It's contractors.
You know, we all need unique houses.
Right.
And maybe townhomes where you can be very sure that you have actually gone next door.
I think that's a great point. I mean, it is strange. I didn't think about that then. We do have very uniform houses here in the United States. You know, my mom lives in Arizona, and she lives out in the rural part, right in the desert. And it's crazy how all the houses that are coming in just all look identical. But when you go out, this is what's tricky. So I'm gonna try to step into your shoes here, Dan. I'm gonna use an analogy to explain a kind of a complex concept. So when you look at a Rubik's Cube, if you buy one fresh, and Ben, I feel like you might have been a Rubik's Cube kid, but when you buy one fresh, you got six sides. We can all agree on that. There are little cubes on each side, and they're all the same color. You got your white side, you got your yellow side, you got your blue side, red side, green side. I think that's five colors. Probably another one. Doesn't matter. We have our perfectly uniform Rubik's Cube. As the people in the apartment, as Hugh and Amir go out and they go to another world, that's basically like just turning one side of the Rubik's Cube. So now the fully white side has a line of blue in it, because now the people from the blue world are now in the white world. And as you start to do this more, as more and more people leave and go out, you're just doing more twists on that Rubik's Cube. And, you know, to the untrained eye, a couple of twists back and forth will make it look completely mixed up. And when in truth, you're maybe 20 moves from putting it back to where it was. This is how I feel. This is my analogy for this world. As people leave and they come back to the face they think they're supposed to go to, but they're not, but they kind of look the same, but they're not the same. And it gets kind of mixed up. And I don't know if there's a solution, Denon, but I feel like this analogy at least holds up visually.
Oh, it holds up, and it's awesome, Dan, for another reason. I'm now going to geek out and try and control myself and not give a two-hour quantum lecture. So let's see if I can do that. There is a version where a two-hour quantum lecture is just about to happen.
Yes.
So let's hope we don't land in that one.
My other self will upload that to YouTube for those to watch.
Right. But so what's cool here is the Rubik's Cube is another great analogy for the quantum wave function, because I said you've got these peaks, you know, and you're different people in the different quadrants, but you're not totally independent peaks. You're still one wave function. So as you move around, you're doing it not as individual four people, but as four people connected in a single thing. And the Rubik's Cube is not separate little dots, right? They are connected. And this is why no matter how much you mix it up, there is a solution to unmix it.
Yes.
Right? What messes you up is if you take off a sticker and another sticker and independently switch the stickers, because now you might mess it up. It might not have a solution.
I know people who did that, yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And this world, even though they don't feel like there is a solution, there is always a way to get everybody back to their original homes because it was a single wave function. The longer you wait and the more you mix it up, the more moves it takes and the more coherence is required. People will have to move together. You can't do it unilaterally. But there is a solution because it is a single wave function, Dan, just like your Rubik's Cube. So ideal analogy, gold star, I would say.
Well, and to nail it down even further, from an engineering perspective, the Rubik's Cube is an even more perfect analogy.
I like where this is going.
Because if you know how a Rubik's Cube is built, the center pieces don't actually move. They're just the pivots for the rest of the pieces. And there's eight pieces around each center. So the Rubik's Cube, we have eight people in the house and we have the six static houses and the people are rotating around between these houses and all the numbers are correct.
I would love to end the episode right now because I don't think we've ever done anything more I've never done anything more perfectly. Unfortunately, we must continue. So I'm going to try to keep this level of quality up for the remainder of the episode. But it made me think, you know, if you were one of the first people out, and you go and you end up in a house, and you know, it's seemingly identical, right? Because in that house, their Hugh and Amir have also left. So you're just replacing them. So to everyone, it looks like nothing has happened. But it's these little things you start to realize, oh, wait, I've got a red glow stick in my pocket. Everyone else has blue glow sticks. What does that mean? You know, we've talked about the Mandela effect where people believe that certain things that Nelson Mandela died early and he ended up living very long. This is where that kind of comes from, where people have these false memories. And I feel like this would be running rampant because there are so many things, we'll get to them later, that change in the world. But that has to be such a weird thing on your psyche as you slowly start to realize that you may not be in the right house.
You know, Dan, I really do wonder, like humans are really, really good at both coming up with strange explanations for things and denying reality. Like we have these weird capacities, right?
Putting it lightly, and, yeah.
Right, no. If you get this situation right where suddenly two people have blue glow sticks, right? Your first reaction is probably being, oh, we you know, just mixed them up differently. We weren't paying attention, right? You would think, okay, we just missed it. But they look, and I'm like, the blue box is still sealed, right? The last thing you're going to think of, really, is that there's another quantum reality that just interfered.
Maybe the three of us would think that, but the average person, that's not where their mind would go. Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, this happens late enough in the movie, they've seen and figured out there's other people. So they do go there, right? Mm-hmm. But early on, I mean, it would be fascinating to me to see the type of explanations you would try and come up with, right? And we see the one house get a box with pictures in it, and they're trying, like, it never occurs to them that there's a house that had those pictures that were them. They're trying to figure out, like, how did somebody mess with them? How did somebody else get their pictures? You know, they're going right to what I would call the normal human conspiracy theories.
Definitely.
And so we're really good at that. It's really interesting how we can bend reality to our, like, needs.
Yeah. I mean, before we realize what's going on, and I saw that, I'm like, oh, man, this is another one of these horror movies that is about, like, some creepy stalker. And thankfully, we were not in a quantum timeline where Dan made us watch another one of those this week.
You watch that many horror movies? Maybe another version of me does. I'm not that bad. Well, it is because I think that, you know, when you look at that, you have to come up with it. We're all struggling for Occam's razor. We're all struggling for the easiest solution. Yeah. And the solution is more that it actually makes more sense that there's a weird stalker next door who's keeping an eye on them and making weird numbers on the back, right? Because they have all these pictures and they all have a random number on the back, which we learned later is random, but they see three people with the same number and they consider that a group. So what do these group of people right. have in common? They're trying to solve it like a puzzle because that's what our mind does. It's mm-hmm. trying to solve it. But that makes more sense than, oh, this comet has completely changed the fabric of reality. We must be jumping between our other realities, right? Like that, you'd be crazy yeah. if you said that. They would kick you out of the house or certify you. You know, I mean, you'd be certifiably loony bins. But that's what happens mm-hmm. here, and they would be right.
And you know, you mentioned, Dan, earlier this idea of how would you know. I was fascinated just from a film point of view of how often, you know, in the very, very first house, when power goes out, a glass falls over and breaks. I don't know if you remember that.
Yes,
and it's
right.
a particular wine glass, right? There are so many shots later throughout the movie of the wine glass not being broken.
Mm. I think I missed that. That's
yeah.
Wow.
Students become the master yeah. here, Dennett.
Well, yeah, you know, it was late at night, so I was more observant than usual.
Sure, sure. Huh.
But you know, it's sort of those little things like, how would you deal with that, right? Like right. if you had left the house and you came back and this glass that was broken was fixed, would you think you had just hallucinated it? Would you think right. you have imagined it? Would you ask everybody else about it? Or would you like just like, okay, I don't want people to think I'm crazy. I'm not going to say anything. Like that's part of the human psychology that I really wonder about in that situation.
Yeah. I mean, I would think most people would just think, oh, they got another glass from the cupboard.
Yeah. Right.
And now, you know, everything's back to normal.
Well, I think I may be speaking for myself here, but, you know, yeah, I like to make fun of you, Denon, but I'm no spring chicken myself. And so as I age, I make a lot of these goofy mistakes. And so easily I could say, oh, well, you know, maybe it's a different class. Maybe I didn't see it. Maybe I could easily come up with ways where like, well, you know, maybe I'm wrong here because that's yep. what you want to believe. That makes it go away. It's not this thing that, you know, mm-hmm. is weighing down in your mind. But the other thing that's kind of interesting here is later on with the main character, M, she's walking around and she's looking into these houses and seeing all sorts of scenarios playing out. Right. And it's yep. it tells you that there is a spectrum of timeless, a spectrum of outcomes, because each one of these parallel realities is not just at the moment that the comet went over, it splits into a bunch of different possibilities where every single possibility, you know, everyone who goes left and right, it happens, that's two different realities where you went left and right. This is also strangely, everyone's past is also taken into consideration. So for example, M, you know, very quickly, you know, she's a dancer and she creates this show. They hire this great world-class dancer to come in. She does not take the understudy role. She does something else. The understudy who came in and took her spot, when the lead actress leaves, that understudy becomes the main character and becomes the main dancer and then becomes world-renowned. And she thinks, oh, that person, I lost my career for that. As we see later on, M stumbles across a reality where she took that understudy job and became the world-class dancer. So she essentially found her best timeline. And we see another one that could easily be construed as the worst timeline. So there's a whole spectrum of this. That's what's going on here. And I'm wondering, guys, you know, let's say we are in this situation. We've bumbled our way through that crazy roulette wheel and we've been shot out into a bunch of different realities. And we're kind of trying to figure out what's good for us. Let's say we stumble across your best timeline, Ben. You know, one where you're doing everything that you want to do and everything's working out perfectly for you. What do you do? What do you do? Do you try to take out your other self and occupy that timeline? Do you try to trick them to leave and push them into that black box in the middle? I don't want to give you answers here, but I'm curious how you would handle this situation. Murderously.
Well, I mean, if I think about it from, you know, you got to wonder how adapted the person in that timeline is. But, you know, if I'm thinking about it, I would say there's always a better timeline. And so maybe you can, you know, I found one that's better enough for me. And maybe I can convince myself who's there that there's one that's even better than this one. And they should go on their own journey to find something even better.
That's super interesting. I like that. That's a good way to do it. I like
that. So I was going a totally different way, Dan.
Okay.
I couldn't bring myself to kill myself because I'm too awesome, right? And, destroying me from the world, even if it's another me, just doesn't make sense.
It's
right?
A crime. It's a war crime in certain certain countries.
Exactly. But we all know I am the master of collaboration. You may be the master of film and television, but my strategy is always to collaborate.
Yep.
And I also know how tired I am, no matter how perfect my timeline is. So I think I would negotiate with my other self to share the timeline. And knowing me, I would be more than willing to do that because, you know, we could just take turns sleeping in late in the morning, you know, or just like going somewhere else that day. I mean, people do wonder, like, how do I get all this stuff done? And they think there's already a clone of me. So no one would find it strange. My friends would, you know, be perfectly fine with this, I think. And I think I am the type of person who could collaborate with myself. I am the opposite of the Mike in the movie.
That's so interesting. I mean, so you would it would kind of be a clone. You'd have your own doppelganger running around to kind of
multiplicity.
Dad. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's team great. Mike.
Yeah.
Mike squared. You know, it's funny. I don't know what I would do. I don't know that I could convince myself to leave. I may have to resort like Kingpin to violence. I don't know. I wouldn't kill myself, but I may have to push myself into that black square or find some way to get my other self in there or convince one of you two to do it for me. I'm not sure. One of those strategies, but I also could not kill myself. That's crazy.
So, Dan, you could just have me call your other self and tell him I actually got a spot on, you know, Alien Con. And you're in the panel with me. And then your other you would follow me no matter how good that other life is. It's not as good as being on Alien Con with me.
That's true. That is, you've solved it. Then you solved it without violence. That's your collaboration. But it is strange because you would have to switch yourself out. And also, maybe that reality is not suited to you. You know, we talked about, you know, healing trauma in our past episode on Echo and Daredevil. Maybe, you know, Ben, we could put you in that level. Maybe you've got a certain amount of trauma in this life that you didn't have in that perfect life. You know, we've talked extensively on the show how you had your pants pulled down publicly by your sister in this one. And maybe that trauma has turned you into the person you are here. But someone with that level of trauma in their background, maybe they wouldn't be compatible with your perfect timeline.
Yeah, perhaps. I mean, maybe the other timelines didn't get their pants pulled down. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that would be something I'd have to ask.
Right.
You know, you got to really do the interviews when you move into these new timelines to see what their experiences are, and to know if it's like if it's a past you want to take up.
Right.
You know, there could be things in there that you don't want to accept, like a bad breakup or something that.
Well, that went awry.
I love that example, Dan.
Yeah, that one.
Ben, whoever you are.
Yeah.
I'm getting confused as to who's in my current timeline.
It's okay.
But Ben, you know, that past really matters. And Dan, I think this is the key, like semi-serious philosophical question.
Okay.
We are all past, present, and believe it or not, future, right? And we've talked about like the block, you know, the various views of time where all time exists, right? You are making a decision on one moment in the other reality's existence, right? What you see at that moment. And your knowledge of your past, but no knowledge of how the two come together to make your future. And I think that's what you're highlighting, Dan, right?
That's exactly what I'm highlighting. Yeah, that's right.
Exactly. And that your happiness has more to do with what your future is going to be than what your current moment is going to be in this particular case, right?
Right.
You're really trying to choose a future, and you're trying to bring together a different past and a different present to make a better future. And I would argue that it's almost there's some that are really bad to step into, but the ones that are all good, it is super hard to predict what is the best because you're trying to combine these two things. I love your point on that.
Yeah, I think it is true. Well, I think because our present is such an amalgamation of all the strange, small, little nuanced paths we took, and you don't know where those paths lead, right? And I think that's interesting. Mm-hmm. I mean, all the things we talked about in Echo and Daredevil is a perfect, you know, perfect example. Richard Turner, the magician, the card mechanic who's blind, if he hadn't gone blind early, he wouldn't have had all the things that gave him, all the trauma, all the drive that pushed him into what he wouldn't be the best card mechanic maybe of all time. He's one of the, I mean, that wouldn't have happened. And I think that that's, you wouldn't predict that. He might say, I'd love the path where that particular genetic disease did not affect me and I was fully sighted. But that, who knows what that world looks like? That's a very different world than the world he lives in now. And is that what you want? I don't know. We don't know. Do we know?
And I do think, Dan, to get slightly philosophical for a moment, this is why I think from things I've seen and read, like the odd thing about being happy is this weird tension of being as comfortable and accepting of everything about the now while still being willing to change and make your life better, mm-hmm. right? Like it's the classic and. If you can't do both of those, you're always falling short somehow, right? If you're only worried about making stuff better, you never enjoy the moment, so you're never happy.
Yeah.
If you don't have any sense of growing and changing, you get stuck and you don't get to be happier, right? So you need to bring these two together in a weird way.
Yeah.
Maybe
you should be the psychologist here.
Yeah, then. Good Lord. Yeah,
sorry. This is the reality where we did not have the 2-hour quantum lecture, but we did have the 2-minute philosophical brain blower.
I think we're supposed to make our audiences think, not stop and stupefy, us.
Wonder about their lives and if they're doing enough to move forward with them.
Questioning all my major life decisions in a mere moment. Well, so let's talk about something else. Let's talk about a man who is not making all these life decisions in this moment because he didn't hear this philosophical rant, and that's our doppelgangers. So in this movie, we kind of, it's not the right term. Doppelganger's not the right term. Because these are really versions of themselves, right? So they are meeting themselves, mm-hmm. although they are, as we've talked about, slightly different in their own way. But they are, in fact, the same person. And that's strange. And what also is weird is once they realize that it's them, when Hugh and Amir, when they go out early on in the movie, Hugh knows that he's seen other versions of them. He's aware. He may not be believing it. He may be questioning it. But he's pretty sure that he's looked at them, or at least in the same dinner party. And they have everyone in this becomes afraid of themselves and the other versions of themselves. And there's this strange tribalism that happens. It starts with the glow sticks. There's 3 different colors. And the initial group we see uses blue glow sticks, but other people come in and they've got red glow sticks. A couple, groups of them meet each other in an alleyway and kind of run by each other. Mm-hmm. It's very strange that they have such a connection to this, to where they are, that they're afraid of versions of themselves. It just struck me as very strange and very primal and very human.
I'm with you, Dan. And it is the opposite of my cooperative solution. Definitely. Where I'm just going to go up to myself and chat. And so who knows what I would really do. But, it goes to this really deep question of who are we? Like, how do we define ourselves and makes us who we are? Mm-hmm. And I feel like one of the interesting things about this movie is it does challenge each of the characters to understand who they really are. You have like Mike in the extreme who very early on is like, look, I'm a drunk and I get angry. That means I'm coming after myself. Right, so I have to be preemptive, right? And that's sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But in a weird way, he's the character who almost is the earliest, most self-aware. Like, wait a minute, this is who I am. I'm dangerous. I better not run into another me. Whereas like other people, I think, are not as confident in their reaction, but to your point, are just as nervous. You look at the group in the street, and there's that moment. They are frozen for a while, Dan.
Yes.
Right? Like, they're staring at each other, and this is what I love. I mentioned earlier, that's that psychological thriller horror moment. Like, is this about to be a rumble?
Yeah, what's happening?
Like, is this like matter, antimatter? If they touch, do they explode?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, they don't necessarily know it's quantum mechanics, so you might be thinking that. Like, your point is so fascinating to me. There's so many things to think about here.
Well, and you also got to wonder, if they touch, will their wave functions, converge and they'll merge into one? There's all sorts of worries there. But I also think about Mike, because, the first Mike we see, he has his drinking under control. And, that maybe is the best mic we see. But, it's this really interesting thing of, like, there's such a spectrum of how good or bad or how mentally stable or unstable someone could be. Like, you know, you see yourself in a dark alley and you really just don't know what to expect. You know, people can have such different experiences based on very small random changes in their lives.
It is very true. And it's crazy because it's almost like a feedback loop, because Mike, he does become self-aware. He realizes that the potential for him coming and hurting himself is very real. And so he then has to prepare for that. So he starts drinking. He starts thinking about bribing people, which creates more I mean, it's this whole crazy feedback loop, and it is a self-fulfilling prophecy. It gets really, really strange really quickly once they become self-aware. But, you know, I think one of the things that, I mean, and these aren't, I wouldn't call this a horror movie, but there's suspense, there's thriller elements. Yes. And I think a lot of that really comes in with the slow realization that people are not in the proper space and time. And, you know, in this, there's a lot of permutations, right? We learn that, you know, they originally think there may be one group for every glow stick. We start to learn that there are actually many more. And there's, you know, the glow sticks are just one of the permutations. You know, one of the characters gets hit in the head and there's choices of band-aids to put on his head. You know, Mike is drunk in some, he's not in others. He becomes violent and attacks, you know, in versions of them. There's a ketamine concoction that's brought in early, and some people use that to nap and some people don't. Which is strange. There's a color of marker on the back of the pictures. Some cell phones are cracked, and those characters' cell phones are not cracked than others. There's a bunch of these, you know, including a security box, which we'll talk about in a little bit. The security box becomes the very unique thing in this movie. But this is, you know, a way to kind of see these little things. And Denon, you mentioned people are not that observant, but I imagine you can observe a glow stick. You know what your glow stick looks like. If I got whacked on the head, I'm sure you could tell the different band-aid. You would know if my screen got cracked. These are some major things that can't be. You know, the wine glass, maybe you could explain away, but a different band-aid on my head or a different glow stick, those are the things that become a little more difficult to rationalize and explain away.
No, I totally agree, and I think there's levels here, Dan. I was thinking about this, you know, for a weird reason. Okay, glow stick. Maybe the box had a mistake, right? Like, you can start saying things like that.
Maybe,
right?
Maybe a couple of blues got mixed into the reds, or vice versa.
Right? Yeah. Like, that was a packaging error, because right. You know, I mean, how often does rat hair show up in peanut butter these days? Right.
Right.
You
know? Right. Right.
And the Band-Aid, I mean, that could just be poor memory. Like, the one that's fascinating to me is because we've become so attached to our cell phones.
Yeah.
I think the cracked cell phone screen is like the game changer.
That's it.
Like, you were listing all of these, Dan, and I'm just like, your cell phone is either cracked or it's not, and you know it. Like,
right.
There is no doubt about our cell phones.
Yeah.
And that's just where I was going. I don't know if that's like a technology thing, an analog thing. We like to compare digital versus analog technology. But there's something about the cell phone one, Dan, I don't think you explained that away.
Yeah. Well, but the problem with the cell phone one is that they're keeping their cell phones with them. It's not becoming a prover, because it's riding along with them through the into the other timelines. I mean, maybe...
Well, that's how you know you're the wrong person, Ben, right? Like, you know he left with a broken cell phone and he came back with a fixed one.
Yeah.
Well, that's how you know that somebody is in the wrong place.
Right.
But you wouldn't be able to tell if you were in the wrong world, because your cell phone didn't change.
Yes, that's a valid point.
Yeah, but it's these little things that start to build that suspense. And I wonder how I would handle that situation as you slowly start to realize that. And even if you're, so there's I think there's three characters who never leave their house. So they're always where they're supposed to be, right? And if you're one of those characters, and you know that people coming into the house probably shouldn't be there, that might be the scarier part, right? Especially when they establish, like, oh, I haven't left. This is my place, but you're not supposed to be here. You know, you're not my husband. Yeah. You're not my, you know, my significant other, right? Like, that's where things get a little crazy. But they seem to solve this, I think, in an ingenious way. You mentioned digital versus analog technology, Denon, and it's the security box. And they kind of try to come up with an analog a two-factor authentication security box where they have pictures of themselves. They've rolled a single six-sided die. and randomly has put those numbers on the back of those pictures. They've put them in a box, and then they've choose a seemingly random item to be the marker for that box, and you put it on the front porch, and that way you'll always know that you're in the right house. I think on the surface, as a suggestion, if I had done this, I would think myself to be pretty brilliant.
And I would agree with you, Dan. I really love that part of it. You know, we see this. I kind of wondered about it, but when websites started doing these things and having icons for you, but it is kind of a nice feature, and it very much is kind of this dual authentication thing. I do wonder a little bit, like with the pictures, I felt they could have put more variation in the pictures and just added some more randomness to it. But obviously they're going with pictures that they have handy. It's interesting that different houses obviously thought about it at different times. You know, some think of it on their own, some think of it because they discover a box in another place. That's an interesting feature of it, but I like how it all comes together. I'm with you, Dan. This is pretty cool from my perspective.
Yeah, it's very cool and it's very smart, but I feel like they're almost making it too complicated. You know, you're doing the pictures, you're doing the different colors, all this stuff. And all you really need is a long random number. You know, they could roll the dice 10, 20, 30 times and just write that number down and then also write it like on an index card for everybody. And then, you know, that it's a lot more secure, you know.
Do you think so? But that's not, you know, that's not dual factor though. That's only one factor.
No. You then write the number like on the side of the house.
Okay.
So you match your index card in your pocket to the index card on the house.
Yeah. Okay.
And you know you're at the right house.
Okay. That's pretty, and if you have 10 numbers, so it's 6 times 10 factorial? No, 6 times 6 times 6 to the 10th power? Jesus. It's been a while since I've done statistics. Is that right? I don't know.
Yeah,
anyway,
6 to the 10th.
Someone's smarter than me figure that out. A lot of possibilities.
It's a big number, Dan. Yeah. Big number. Big number. That's an official mathematical term.
Right.
That was my problem, is they're only rolling, you know, one number for each person. That's only, I mean, that's 6 to the 6th, which is still a big number.
Yeah, it's all right.
But it's not hard to get bigger.
Yeah. Well, you know, the problem is, Ben, it just goes to show, and we've talked about this a lot, Dan and Ben, you know, there is great value, survival value in being a nerd, right?
Yeah.
And watching, you know, watching horror movies, watching science fiction movies, it prepares you. Clearly, these are not D&D players, and they don't have access to a 20-sided die. And, in fact, a 20, an 8, a 4, right? So what you actually are going to do is probably generate a 15-digit number out of randomly selected dice sizes, so you don't know what the probability for generating each number is, and some of the numbers can go to 20, and some can only go to 4.
Yes.
And you put that all together, and it's an unbreakable code. It's almost as good as a quantum computing code.
It's an analog quantum computing code is what to the best. You guys might be right, but then you can't stick, you know, a sock puppet or an oven mitt in there, which is so much fun to do. But you're right. The numbers, the permutations are a little bit better. And you know, you want to be the nerd or the redneck in any sort of survival situation, because those are the only two who are ever prepared for what's happening around them. But there might be other scenarios, guys, where you might need to get fooled, or you might need to figure your way out of a situation. And I want you to tell me, this is the place to tell me about them. This is our Errors, Additions, and Omissions section. Things we wanted to talk about, but we didn't quite get to. Denon, is there anything about two-factor authentication, parallel universes, Schrodinger's cat, or your cats that you wanted to discuss?
Well, just two quick things, even though it's probably not necessary. After rolling all those numbers, I would add a random sock puppet or oven mitt just because it's fun,
sure,
not because it's needed. But more, my more important addition is, Dan, a little known fact, probably it's a close tie. My favorite course to teach is either quantum mechanics or math methods. I haven't taught quantum mechanics in a while, but it is definitely true the next time I teach it, this is going to be a required movie to watch to prepare my students for them to both figure out what is accurate and what isn't, but so that they can have this metaphor of the 8 people in their quadrants in a box. And I'm just going to generate, you know, that next generation of super physicists who really understand quantum mechanics better.
Thanks to this show and this movie. And yes, I take exactly. full responsibility for their success. What about you, Ben? Anything about this movie you wanted to talk about?
Well, I think one thing is, you know, in a past episode, we talked about From, where you could use a rope to figure out the topology of the town you're in and maybe figure a way out. And it got me thinking about this movie. Like, could you use a rope to drag yourself back? But my concern is, when you enter the blackness, I'm thinking the rope would probably be in coherence with itself in the black area, and you wouldn't, and everyone would have had a rope, so you would just now be holding on to the rope from that world, and it wouldn't actually help you get your way back. So they were smart in not trying the rope trick.
That's why I think it only works in labyrinths and Pac-Man worlds. Might be the only place exactly. that the rope trick works. It's not universal, but I do love it. Well, I will tell you, I'm going to give a gift to everyone. I got nothing for this one. I think this is a perfect movie, and I had so many errors in our last episode that I couldn't possibly flood this section with them. So I've got nothing. I got nothing for you guys. But what I do have one other thing, though. If you got something for me, I got something for you. And that is, if you want to get in touch with us on social media, I'm going to make it easy for you. We are found on X, formerly Twitter, at FGGBTPod. We are on Facebook, at FGGBT. We are at FGGBT.com for all of our episodes and everything you want to know about this show and others. And if you want to send us an email, questions at fggbt.com is the way to do that. Oh, but you can get in touch with us individually. What about that? What about that, Denon? That's what you wanted me to say. You can get, there's a world where I don't ever screw this section up. And I want to be a part of that one. That's where I want to go. I got to convince that self.
Part of that world.
I want to be a part of that world. Yeah. But of course, you can get in touch with us individually. Denon, you're next. What do you got? Take it away.
Hey, well, this is where, if I could sing, I would actually break into the song from Aladdin, A Part of My World. Yeah. But luckily for you, Dan, as much as I love musicals, I cannot sing.
Thank you.
But we would get in touch with me by flipping my name. That's at Denon Michael on most social media. I've added Instagram at Physics of X. You can get in touch with me on YouTube. That's just michaeldenon.com on YouTube. Actually, there's probably no .com because it's YouTube. But my website is denonmichael.com, and Facebook is at Prof Denon Michael.
Nailed it. You nailed it, Denon. You nailed it. We are killing the end of this show.
We're
butchering it. But there's one man whose his stuff is so easy, couldn't possibly butchered. Ben, where can people find you if they want to get in touch with you?
No, it's very easy with me. I am at BSeepser on all the major social media networks.
Well, hold on a second here. How do you spell that?
Spell that BSIEPSER.
All right, that is pretty easy. Well, I can be found on, let's start with X, formerly Twitter, at Daniel J. Glenn, on Instagram, at The Daniel J. Glenn, on Facebook, at Analytical Mastermind. Website is DanielJGlenn.com. And that's all I got. Denon, do you have anything to tell me? I'm really nailing this. I really got to find that other version of me. I got to get on that.
Well, Dan, but this is the fun version of us.
Sure.
And I know everyone had so much fun. They're listening on their favorite podcast channel. They've already rated, reviewed it as awesome, and subscribed. But if they happen to be a reality where they forgot to do that, they can do it now.
And if they're watching us on YouTube, they can hit the like button, subscribe, and ring that bell so they never miss an episode, and they help us reach more people with this important information.
And of course, this episode contains powerful information that can be used by those who want to take over the world and seek world domination. So if that is happening in your world, just hop into another one. That seems to be relatively easy, and we figure that out. But if you don't want to do that, if you want to stick to yours and have that tribalism we talked about earlier, do so, but use this information and do good with it. Remember, you always want to be a superhero, never a supervillain. So until next time, thank you for listening. Fascinating Gadgets, Gizmos, and Gear-Based Technologies is a Glencoe production and is produced by me, Daniel J. Glenn. The Fascinating Gadgets, Gizmos, and Gear-Based Technologies introduction was produced by Daniel J. Glenn and Paul Springers, with music and sound design written and performed by Paul Springers. Now, of course, if you're listening to this episode and you've gotten this far, you're going to want to subscribe. Well, how do you do that? We're on all the major podcasting platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Spotify. But if you're not already subscribed to those platforms, I made it easy for you. Go to our website, fgggbt.com. You'll find links to those subscribe buttons and also links to our social media, both for the show and for our individual experts, the members of the Brain Trust. That's all right there. fgggbt.com. And before you leave, don't forget to check out our other episodes. You can find the link at the top of the page for everything we've got, and you'll notice that we've got both a YouTube version and an audio-only version. Depending on what you like, we got it for you. And if you do like those videos, you can go ahead and subscribe to those as well. We're on youtube.com/DanielJGlenn. And once again, if you like this show, you're going to like everything that I do. Go to danieljglenn.com to find out more. Thank you for listening.